Welcome to Interfaith Encounters, consequential conversations with leaders from different faith traditions about how their communities are responding to the challenges of contemporary society. I'm your host, Dr. Robert Hunt, Director of Global Theological Education at the Perkins School of Theology of Southern Methodist University. In this first series, we will speak with leaders of the Islamic, Sikh, Jewish, Christian, Hindu, and Buddhist traditions about how their communities are responding to the COVID-19 pandemic. Our guest this week is Pravrajika Brahmaprana. She joined the Sarada Convent at the Vedanta Society of Southern California in 1973, and she has been an ordained sannyasini since 1984. She has been a Vedanta representative on several interfaith councils in America, including the Hindu-Catholic Dialogue sponsored by the Archdiocese of Los Angeles and the Snowmass Interspiritual Dialogue. She has also compiled and edited several books on Vedanta, including the complete works of Swami Vivekananda, Volume 9. Brahmaprana is currently the resident minister of the Ramakrishna Vedanta Society of North Texas in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex. Welcome, Brahmaprana. The first question I wanted to ask is, what's the most important thing that those of us who are not in the Vedanta movement need to understand about how your community is affected by the COVID-19 pandemic?
Well, Dr. Hunt, many of our devotees here in Dallas are from India. This is the first center where I have been in a mostly Indian center. I'm from Southern California, where it's mostly Western. And as you know, India is 1.3 billion people. So there's no such thing as social distancing that's possible. And so our young folks and our older folks who have relatives, family there, they're concerned about them. And because when it hits, many are dying of fever now and have been for years, and no one really knows what that fever is. It could be malaria, it could be dengue, but now coronavirus is very much under the surface and just beginning to pop up in the slums. So when it hits, it's going to be devastating.
So they're really concerned, not only for themselves, but especially for their families back in India.
Absolutely. And here, I've asked some of our young people what the challenges are now of this social distancing. You know, we're in lockdown. And I know very well, having visited India 5 times, that it's a very people-oriented culture. Yeah. And they're used to rubbing shoulders with each other. And the bigger the crowd, the better the feeling. So social isolation is very, very challenging for them. And especially for the young single adults we have here who are on work visas.
Are there particular times and occasions when these restrictions on movement are particularly difficult for the members of your community?
Well, they miss the center terribly. This is a big part of their life. And we're a new center. We've only been here established for about 12 years. Mm-hmm. But our center, I've tried to make it a family. And so after our services, we eat together, and that's a time when lasting friendships are made, friendships with older and younger members who are a support for difficulties that they may be going through in this country. So they miss that. They miss our study circles, our workshops that we have, our celebrations where we have more people coming. Mm-hmm. And they miss the spiritual presence on the property. They just, they really miss that.
Can you say a little bit more about how the being on the property itself is spiritually helpful to people? And maybe describe a little bit about what your center looks like in terms of when they would come and be part of that.
Well, I live in the monastery, and behind us is a large garden sanctuary with a little chapel. And that's where we hold our satsangs, our small study groups. And then right next to that, on the property next to us, is the large center, the hall, and the multipurpose room where we gather and eat and hold our Sunday events and our workshops. In the garden itself, there's just such a strong feeling of peace. And in our little chapel where the work here began, there's a real strong current of spiritual vibration that's palpable.
Are there ways that those of us outside the community can be supportive of your community at this time?
Our young Indians are facing added anxieties about their work visas. And this is just in the last few years. They've lived in this country for maybe 7, 8, 9, 10 years. They've bought homes here, and suddenly their visas are called into question. And sometimes they're sent back to India. They've had to sell everything on the spot, move back, and then come back again with nothing. Also, job discrimination.
Yeah.
Just in the last few years, I would say there's been reports coming to me of job discrimination, and that brings an intensity to life that's very, very stressful.
So when you take some of these background social issues that are affecting really all immigrant communities, questions about work visas, discrimination in some fields, and then you add the COVID-19 epidemic, it really puts these young people under stress.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. And still they're generous in the way they want to serve.
So that was my next question. What are the things that you're trying to do to be helpful to the broader community around you as well as your own members?
On the broader scope, we have an ongoing food drive right here, and Irving Care's food pantry really relies on that. Yeah. It's been stressed right now because people are afraid to go to the grocery stores, but it's still growing, and by Mother's Day, we hope to have a huge donation. So that is what we're doing. The selfless service, because we are a small community that's just developing here in Dallas, our young people are offering give service to our older members, buy food for them, do odd jobs around their homes, anything they can. And for the larger community too, right now, the Sunday services that we're doing online and the Raja Yoga study circles that we're doing are going to be introductory for how people who are not even in our tradition can receive value from yoga practices to calm their mind.
And I imagine that you have actually had people from outside the community seeking these practices at this particularly difficult time.
Oh, absolutely. And as you probably know, we allowed Hatha yoga teachers to come in and start giving exercises that has stopped this year because of the social distancing to people who are connected with yoga. The exercises, they're developing an interest in the deeper yoga, the meditation and the calming techniques and so forth.
To take this a step deeper, how is the response of your community to this pandemic rooted in the teaching of your own scripture and your tradition?
In India, you probably know we do disaster relief on a large scale. Modi has asked our Ramakrishna Mission to feed those who are starving. Our centers throughout India are feeding the poor. And that's strongly rooted in the yoga called Karma Yoga, the yoga of action, selfless service that's especially taught in the Bhagavad Gita. There on the battlefield of life, Arjuna sinks to the ground in desperation and fear. And he sees as his enemy, his kinsman across the battlefield. And at that time, Lord Krishna gives the highest teachings of Vedanta. And one of those teachings is Karma Yoga. And with especially our young folks who are in IT technology and have a difficulty focusing for a long period of time, this Karma Yoga is a practice that they can do. And they just really come together with that.
I would imagine that can also work its way out practically in terms of providing sort of tech support for the older members of the community who are now having to learn this stuff very quickly to stay in touch.
Yes, I've relied on my young techies to set up our Zoom to get us online, and they're always ready and willing, and they're right by my side because they know that I am a little deficient in this area. I'm learning, but I'm behind.
You would be looking a lot at the Bhagavad Gita and the teaching of Arjuna at this highest moment of revelation.
Yes, and also Vivekananda, who really modernized that text, Karma Yoga, and he also admitted that it was his greatest work, because in serving others, the yoga part is that we are serving the oneself in all. So when we try to engage the mind, and this is a very difficult yoga to do, it's harder even than meditation, because to engage the mind internally while we're in action, it takes a lot of concentration. But when we can and do that, however little or great we can do that, we feel elevated, and the recipient feels a joy, brings a lot of satisfaction.
You've been very active in interfaith work here in Dallas. What are the ways that different religious communities can work together in order to benefit the whole of society?
Well, you're doing this right now with your podcasts, but there are other initiatives also going on right now. There was just on Monday, there was an interfaith prayer gathering. Mm-hmm. A lot of folks tuned into that. There are some initiatives coming up. There's going to be a webinar on spiritual well-being in the midst of global crisis. Swami Atmarupananda from the Houston Center will be contributing to that with another representative. And then there's going to be a global day of healing coming up on April 24th. But we do need this. We need this to use this challenging time to seek answers, to penetrate the crisis itself and try to go deeper into what this means and how we can change ourselves.
And finally, what do the members of your community learn from a crisis?
Well, my talks this month are focused on how we can use this spiritual crisis to our spiritual benefit, because we don't grow muscles by sitting at home. We don't grow spiritual muscles without resistance training. And that resistance is meeting the challenges and turning them into a doorway to our spiritual life through karma yoga, through trying to see more deeply into the nature of these crises, the focusing on the heroes that are coming out of these crises, and how we can incorporate the self-reflection, the sense of isolation into a period of self-reflection, into a period of beneficial solitude, and reconfigure our values. For example, it's a very humbling thing to have a virus like this that doesn't need a passport, that can cross borders, where we see scientists throughout the world sharing. There's no politics in the science of healing a community and trying to benefit from the fact that we are interconnected throughout the world. We're not just a family or a national family, but we're a world family.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate these great answers that you've given us, and I think it's going to be very enlightening for the listeners. I do want you, if you will, just give me a brief description of how the Vedanta movement begins and what is its basis.
Well, the Vedanta movement, it's a religion, a philosophy, a way of life. It is embedded in the Vedas, which are the oldest living scriptures of the world, based on the revelations of the seers of India. Mm-hmm. It's a non-dual philosophy, but also incorporates various levels of dualism, qualified non-dualism within it, mm-hmm. as rungs on a ladder to spiritual attainment. And we have the four yogas that correspond to the four aspects of our psychophysical being that can help us to yoke our minds to our spiritual core. It was Vivekananda who brought this message to America at the first Parliament of World Religions in 1893. He captivated some of the best minds of America. And in that way, the message became very public.
It's really spread worldwide through the Ramakrishna Mission, is that right?
Yes, it has. Yes, it has. In India, Vivekananda is considered the patriot saint. And in this world, he is just an amazing teacher that many, many Americans can relate to, because he wore our clothes, he spoke our language, he ate our food, and he traveled and rubbed shoulders with the likes of William James and Nikola Tesla, Harvard Divinity School. And in this way, his ideas really went into the society in a very deep way.
Thank you very much.
You know, Robert, it's a joy always to be with you, whether it's on Zoom or at our monastery having tea together. We will have our tea together.
This has been an episode of Interfaith Encounters, consequential conversations with leaders of different faith traditions. I'm Robert Hunt, inviting you to join us for new episodes each Tuesday.